This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. You're listening to episode 172 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, how was your week?
Oh, wonderful week, David. Thanksgiving and all, you know, eat too much, sleep too much, just, you know, generally have a good time. But it's another week, so we need to do another show. And we have a guest with us this time, don't we?
Does he really count as a guest anymore?
He's more like an occasional co-host.
Yeah, I think we have to give him that title. Okay. And a certified Part 107 UAV driver.
That's right.
Welcome back, Max. The other Max. Max Trescott.
Gobble, gobble, gobble. I thought you were going to say that you have a turkey on the show as a guest this week.
No. So
happy to be here. And happy Thanksgiving to you both as well.
Thank you. Same to you. Now, all of you listening will probably recognize that voice of Max Trescott. He's a pilot. He's a CFI, speaker at many events, author, glass cockpit expert, and newly minted drone guy. So very good. But the reason we asked Max to join us is because he attended Drone World Expo. That was November 15th and 16th. 2016 in San Jose, California, which is that around the block or is that kind of just exactly where you live?
It is around the block. I'm in Mountain View, which nobody had ever heard of until a little company named Google decided to place their headquarters here years ago. Yeah. So yeah, when the traffic is good, it's a 15-minute run down to San Jose.
Now, the sort of the tagline for a Drone World Expo, at least on their website, is the defining event for the commercial applications of UAS technology. And they describe this as being about real-world solutions to your business and environmental challenges. So, Max, you attended one of those days, is that right?
Yeah, I was there for the keynote and most of the day on Tuesday, which was the first of the 2 days, and then I had to go do some real work.
Okay.
Yeah, real work is flying around in an airplane taking video with your camera. We don't go there.
You know, it's really kind of funny. I'm a flight instructor, and so, yes, I do flight instruction and always have the camera at the ready in case I see something kind of interesting. So that just kind of rides along for free.
So tell us about the Drone Expo. What about the attendees? Did you get a sense for what kinds of people attended the event, what they were looking for?
You know, most of the folks appeared to be somewhat local to Northern California. I did run into one guy who had flown in from Oklahoma City, and there were some somebody from Dallas, stuff like that. But most of it was pretty California centric folks. And I would say that there was kind of a mix of end users of various kinds, and some. Some folks who were just involved in the industry on the selling side who were attending. But I would say it was probably tilted a little bit more toward end user. And what was interesting to me was it was a more diverse mix than I ran into when I was down in Southern California about a year and a half ago at the AMA show, which had a lot of drone stuff going on. That was very, very heavily slanted toward folks who were in cinematography. And so we had a much more balanced mix up here in Northern California for this show.
Interesting. Now, tell us about the keynote address that you attended.
Sure. So that was done as a panel discussion. And I think what's interesting to me is that, you know, we've got a lot of major companies who are starting to get involved in it. So one of the people on the panel was from IBM. Intel was a big exhibitor here, though they were not on the particular panel. A fellow who I worked for a while was on the panel, Joey Rios from NASA. He is the technical lead for the UTM project, and I worked for him a couple years ago on a GA project that they were doing there related to trying to improve safety in Alaska. But the moderator, who I think you folks know, was Gretchen West. She is the senior advisor for innovation and technology from Hogan Lovells.
Right, which, yes.
Heavily involved in drones. Other speakers were Tara Lyons, who is from the White House Office of Science and Technology. I'm guessing that means that she'll probably be looking for another job in about 2 months. Mm. But a very, very bright young lady who spoke extremely well about the kind of the government's involvement in a couple of different areas. I mean, she touched on a number of different aspects, and it's real clear that drones is a major topic that's actively being discussed by a number of different agencies and used by a lot of different agencies. So anyway, Gretchen did a great job of asking folks about the future of drones. I thought probably the most interesting answer I heard in the group was from Ingo Pyroth, who was from IBM. His title, I guess, is he's what, the GM lead partner IBM innovation. Anyway, we've got a clip from him. If you want to go ahead and run this, this will be Ingo Pyroth from IBM responding to Gretchen's question.
All right, here it is.
So you mentioned business cases and use cases. What are some examples of some of the more unique future thinking, forward thinking use cases that are out there? And Ingo, I might start with you if you don't mind. What is this audience, the end users that are getting into this space, what do they need to be looking out for when it comes to some of these use cases?
So I'm going to mention a few, and at the risk of being considered super boring, I'm going to talk about a couple kind of categories. There's some really cool, innovative use cases that we've been studying recently around mosquito vector control, where drones are collecting mosquitoes, about whale watching, etc. But frankly speaking, we're focused primarily on industrial commercial applications. And in that sense, the starting point for many of our conversations with customers is the Domino's Pizza ad. So when is Amazon going to deliver my packages? When is my Domino's Pizza going to arrive? When is this going to happen? And frankly speaking, we see that as perhaps 1, 2, maybe 3% of the market right now. Honestly, cargo is in our opinion still kind of out there. It's an awesome use case. It's going to transform lots of industries, but the vast majority of what we're seeing is all observation based. And so visual inspection is really where the bulk of our interactions with customers are happening. We've got a number of initiatives that we're working on at the moment. In France, we're working on right now vegetation management for railways, for example. So having drones fly railways, inspect where the vegetation is overgrowing the tracks, send out your gardeners to kind of fix the problem. We're doing a lot of stuff in the insurance space for post-catastrophe analysis. Specifically, we've got one at the moment around hail damage inspection, so rooftop inspection. And we're also working on one, and if anyone was at World of Watson a couple of weeks ago, we're partnering with somebody to do cell phone tower inspection along a couple dimensions, so rust, antenna alignment, loose cables. Where typically all of the hard work starts happening is that, yes, we can do the visual inspection, someone can fly up there and have a look at it, but multiply that times 10,000 drones doing it on a daily basis, and you suddenly have a huge data problem. So the vast majority of the use cases start with visual inspection of some sort and observation, and end up really focusing on what do we do with video analytics, so you don't have to have a bank of people staring at videos looking for the one moment where a tree fell over a train track or the hail has damaged the roof. So automating that process and using some sort of cognitive capabilities around video analytics to make that happen is where we're seeing the vast majority of our use cases.
I guess, Max, once we get past regulation, we're going to end up talking about data management, aren't we? It seems to be that seems to be an underlying issue. I'll defer to my former computer programmer, Mr. Trescott. What do you think? Do you think data management is going to be the issue going forward?
Well, I was never a programmer, but I definitely was involved in selling high-end enterprise solutions. And yeah, that was the stuff that always drove me crazy with some of the software side. The hardware stuff, yeah, that's easy. The software, you know, that's where the challenges are. And it looks like that's what's happening, you know, in the drone industry as well. You know, the hardware is coming together pretty fast. A lot of capabilities for acquisition. But then we have this, you know, huge problem that Ingo highlighted, which is, gosh, now what do we do with all the data? And you know, I know that from an inspection standpoint, you know, drones are supposed to try and save companies time and money. But if they're going to have to hire, you know, a bank of people to sit there and just monitor the video, well, there go some of the savings out the window. So, yeah, I think the visual analytics is probably a huge nut to crack. And you know, when they crack that, then that's going to help a lot.
The other point that Ingo made that sort of resonated with me is this notion of observation-based missions rather than cargo missions being kind of the next step. To me, that seems kind of intuitive. It seems to me that observation-based missions are an easier task, an easier next step to accomplish. They don't have as many complications, as many implications when you start talking about sending cargo around via drone. There, it just seems like there's so many issues associated with that that it's just a tougher thing. So, yeah, I think I agree with him that really what we're going to see, at least in the near to midterm, are more applications that involve, you know, drones, unmanned aircraft, using sensors of various sorts to detect and observe various different conditions, whether that's precision agriculture, as we talked last time, or structure inspections, or things like that. I think that's where the growth is going to be.
Yeah, I was so happy to hear him articulate that delivery is perhaps, you know, 1% to 3% of the market, because I think for the longest time, I just had this sense of, how come, you know, delivery doesn't seem to me like it's right around the corner? And you know, people talk about pizza delivery, and all I can think of is, you know, four propellers attached to a box, and hey, the box kind of blocks the downward flow of air, which makes it pretty hard to get an aerodynamic pizza delivering a vehicle unless it gets pretty large. I mean, and that's just one of many, 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 many problems. So, yeah, I was happy to hear him kind of boil it down and go, yep, for now, observation has the bulk of the market, because that really kind of fit with the cognitive dissonance I had, which was, boy, people are all talking about this, but I don't quite see it, you know, happening.
Yeah, I like to be open-minded about new things coming along, but when I think of drone package delivery, I just can't help but think of just many, many obstacles to that being practical.
Yeah,
not to mention there's us poor slobs that live within a quarter of a mile of an airport.
Yeah, you're out of luck. Forget it. You're gonna have to go pick up your own pizzas, David.
I'm from Philly. We arrest people for flying drones.
That's right.
I'm from California. We put them in prison for flying drones. Yeah. Yeah. No, I think, in fact, San Jose and Philadelphia, perfect examples. You got huge metro cities, you know, millions of people, you know, within 4 or 5 miles of an airport. And it's like, well, things are going to have to change a little bit to make that work out.
Yeah. Well, what else from the expo did you observe? Any products? Did you have a chance to go out with the exhibits?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the one that really struck me was Intel and the amount of gear that they had that they were showing. And they've done a couple of acquisitions recently. Coincidentally, I've met two of the people before the show whose companies were acquired by Intel. Both were out of Germany. And so that's one of the ways that they've, you know, kind of grown their base of products. But they were also showing some new things as well, too. So they were showing their Aero Compute Board, which for $399 is about the size of a playing card. So, you know, pull out the ace of diamonds or whatever. That's about the footprint of this a compute board, which essentially has you know, everything you would need to, you know, control your drone, including vision capabilities and flight control capabilities and onboard storage and, you know, so on and so forth. What they've done is they've taken that board and they're now offering a ready-to-fly drone. And it's supposed to ship in the December timeframe, but it combines their compute board. It includes their RealSense distance and vision detection, which is essentially a stereo infrared camera that they use for sense and avoid by calculating a distance. And it also has a Linux operating system that that runs on it. And the whole idea was they're trying to put together a platform that primarily software developers can use to create their applications and, you know, back-end programs and things like that, so that they don't have to mess with the hardware. So think of it as kind of a, you know, an off-the-shelf, open system piece of hardware that people can play with. Now, the funny part for those of us who are in the RC radio control world includes a Spectrum transmitter. Looks to me like a DX5E, which is one of the lower end controller transmitters that an RC pilot would use to control his model airplanes or maybe his drones. So it's kind of funny to see that part of the package. But this, I think, makes a lot of sense to have something that's just off the shelf that people can go play with.
Hmm. I get the sense that Intel isn't a huge player in the smartphone, in the mobile phone market. I think a lot of other chips are generally used, although I'm not entirely positive of that. But this sounds like Intel doesn't want to be left out of the exploding drone market, which certainly is going to require a lot of chips and boards and things.
Boy, if I were going to pick one market, I think I would have picked the cell phone market.
But, yeah.
You know, I mean, long term, who knows how big this will grow, but it's hard to envision that everybody is going to have their drone just as everybody has their own cell phone. But let me mention one of the other pieces of gear they were showing there, the Intel Falcon 8 Plus. This came out of a company that was called Ascending Technologies out of Germany. And really interesting design. I just heard today from one of the people from that company that the V shape, which holds the 8 propellers, came out of a student project at a university in Germany, where the student was told this will never fly, which I thought was great. I mean, we all love it when, you know, folks tell people like Fred Smith of FedEx, you know, your paper gets a C because nobody will ever want to ship packages overnight. So it's always gratifying to see that professors are wrong sometimes, and that people prevail and can make their things work. But the value proposition of having somewhat of a V shape for the propellers, so in other words, there are four propellers on one side, four on the other, but instead of them all being parallel at one end, two of the propellers are closer and the other end they're farther apart. The camera is pointing out between the wider end of the V, and it's apparently the only drone on the market in which you never will get a propeller, you know, dipping into front of view of the camera.
Hmm.
Most drones are set up so that, most of the time you don't get propellers in the view. But even things like the Inspire, as I understand, the high-end drone from DJI, there are times when you can be in a particular flight regimen where, oops, there's a propeller, dipping down into view of your camera. So this V-shape from the Falcon 8 Plus eliminates that. And I thought that was pretty wild.
Hmm. Clever, yes.
And let's see. So that was Intel. You know, I was really intrigued by the agriculture, and so I sat through a couple of presentations related to the ag market, which was not something that I knew very much about. But coincidentally, I'd also listened to your prior episode. I guess two episodes ago with Brett Chillicott from Ad Eagle, and it was kind of fun listening to that after having been to these presentations, because I was hearing, some of the same kinds of things. And I really came away thinking that this is a really perfect match for where the market is right now. It seems to me like the hardware is up to the task, the software is up to the task, and anybody who really wants to start using drones for farming right now is in a good position to really go ahead and do that. So who was it? Esri, which has their ArcMap ArcGIS, Geographic Information System software has come up with a new drone to map module for that system that they were talking about. So anybody who currently uses ESRI software, and that's ESRI, really big guys in GIS, they've now got an interface where you can now bring in drone data as yet another layer to the map data that you can have with their ArcGIS system. MicaSense was there giving presentations on working the field from 400 feet, essential tools for success in agriculture. I was kind of intrigued to see the pricing on one of the company's agriculture solution. I think it came out to I believe 60 cents an acre. So it's basically a pay per acre, type solution. But if you flew it was around 200 and some feet. So I think if you were flying below 60 meters, the price doubled. So I guess there's kind of a sweet spot there where if you're up above roughly 210, 220 feet, where the resolution is such that it should be good enough for most agriculture applications. But if you get down lower than that, it's going to take more time to cover the field. You're going to have more data, and maybe the resolution is greater than you really need. Therefore, it's costing them a lot more to host all of your data, which is why they were going to charge you more if your drone was down low. The ESRI presentation was not as much ag related as it was more about surveying of buildings and cities and places like that. One of the things that popped in my mind was, hey, this would be perfect for airports, to survey everything that they've got going on their airport. But what they pointed out was how the drones can gather data, which you just can't get from satellite or from airplane. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious to most people that the closer you are to the ground, the greater resolution that you have. And I realized that. But what I hadn't realized was that by flying multiple passes at low level, you can really create 3D views of all the walls and all the different features of all the buildings. And so you then came up with an output which you could then scroll and look at on your screen, and you can just look at a building from any angle and just see the actual walls. And one of the companies also talked about doing not only mapping of the outside of the buildings, but doing the inside. They said a lot of architectural requirements these days are starting to say, hey, we want you to fly and map the inside of our building so that we can then compare things both inside and outside. That's an interesting application. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
One of the big challenges that they have for these large, outside, building or city type things is just registration of all the data, so that, if you're looking at the data from one view and you need to meld it in with data from another view, how do you register it so that, the corners match properly and, the points all line up. So one of the companies had gone into great detail in terms of coming up with markers which would they would place the day ahead of time, out at each of the locations. And the markers had to, they couldn't just be a large ball, because that's going to be, too big. You need to be able to register these things, pretty much at the centimeter type level. So they had a marker that was, probably 1 or 2 feet square, but then which had, little things in the center of it, which would, be smaller, which you could then, register against. So that was a problem that I hadn't really thought about. And so that was kind of fun to see as well, too.
One of the things that I've been wondering about lately is consolidation. And we've seen a little bit of that starting to occur. But really, this kind of industry is characterized by lots and lots of various companies that are, carving out little niches in this sort of overall industry. I mean, there are some big players or those that are, looking at it broadly. But there are a lot of little small guys, I think, with their little niches. Did you detect any conversations or any feelings about possible consolidation coming? Or do you think we're too far away from that to really be thinking about that now?
Well, I mean, the one thing that kind of, you know, resonates with me on that was just Intel, you know, having purchased a couple of smaller companies. So that certainly for them, that was kind of a quick growth acquisition type of strategy. But you're right, to the extent that some of these smaller companies are getting gobbled up, you know, that tells you the story right there. So, yeah, I think there's still tons of room for small companies, and there's going to be, you know, great opportunities for them to get acquired by bigger companies and to cash out.
Mm, yeah, sometimes that's the plan, right?
Yeah, and you know, it probably should be. Yeah. You know, so there. Have you talked about Drone Hive in the past? A company that is working on doing HR essentially for drone operators.
Doing HR.
Yeah, so
as in human resources?
Yeah, exactly. So basically, you know, for companies that want to hire operators, you know, these are, you know, a company that will go out and hire operators and make them available for a day or a week or a month at, you know, different locations around the country and so on. So I thought that was kind of interesting. So now you can outsource your drone operator workforce. So the company Drone Hive, H-I-V-E, was there talking about that.
Yeah, that's very interesting. That's something we talked about. We touched on a little bit when we were talking about precision agriculture. Do the growers want to become proficient drone operators themselves, or do they want to, you know, concentrate on their core business and essentially outsource that to someone else, purchase that as a service?
Yeah, and one of the things that the CEO of Drone Hive said that really caught my attention was he said that in talking with you know, companies that are looking to, you know, to contract out and to hire operators, that many of their business models are set up where, you know, the cost of the operator has to be somewhere around $15 to $20 an hour to make the whole thing pay out, as compared to alternatives that they're looking for. And I thought, wow. You know, in some parts of the country, that might be a good alternative to working at you know, local jobs that might be available. In other parts of the country, you know, around major cities and things like that, that's not very competitive at all. But you know, it does make me wonder: will there be you know, a lot of outsourcing of operators who might come from you know, parts of the country where there, you know, there aren't good job opportunities, but they'll get, you know, shipped around the country and get a move from here and there. And, you know, if you're being paid 8 hours a day, then that's a good deal. Someone at the conference said that what they are seeing is that on average, the independent drone operators currently are on average only doing about four jobs a month. So That's obviously not going to make a full-time income unless you can figure out how to string a lot more jobs together. And I think that's part of the challenge for the, you know, the single person business is you can spend a lot of time on each job just you know, selling and then you know, getting the job and then having to go through all the logistics of it before you finally go out and actually do the drone flying, which I suspect, you know, is probably, in terms of time, probably the small part of the entire thing. So I think that makes a challenge for entrepreneurs to figure out, you know, how do you acquire the business and how do you price it in a way that, you know, the overhead isn't killing you.
So if you were to attend next year's Drone World Expo, Max, do you think it would look a lot like this year's, or do you think it'll be something completely different 12 months from now?
It's a good question. I bet we're going to see a lot more software. And I'm thinking they're going to be more kind of end-to-end solutions here. You manage your entire, you know, data acquisition and processing and display and so on. I mean, that's kind of my guess. I don't think they're going to see leaps and bounds on the hardware side. But yeah, I would have to guess we're going to see a lot more kind of end-to-end solutions so that people don't have to cobble together their own solutions.
Which is interesting, Max, because Parker said the same thing about Las Vegas. It's not necessarily the hardware anymore. It's the software and the sensors, et cetera. We've moved on from quadcopters. They might get a little bit better. And of course, there's my infamous battery life, but the rest of it seems to be changing.
Yeah, certainly the battery is, those are not moving very fast technology-wise, and they never have. I mean, that's been the kind of the bane of technology's existence for, you know, 30, 40 years that I've been involved in high tech. Everybody keeps waiting for the batteries to make major breakthroughs, and they just keep plodding along very slowly. You know, nobody's figured out how to apply Moore's Law to batteries.
Yet, that's right. When that happens, the world changes a lot. Although we did talk last episode about fuel cells, and you know, maybe there's that direction as well. Well, there's certainly a lot of conferences out there relating to unmanned aircraft. I know we've got coming up December 9th and 10th, the International Drone Expo and Business Conference. That's in Los Angeles. We're a media partner with them. That ought to be a good show. There are many shows around internationally as well, too. This is not something that's sort of a U.S. phenomenon. There are drone shows, unmanned aviation shows that are really occurring around the globe. So there are a lot of people with a lot of interest in this area. It's as always, it's exciting to be involved in it.
And we're media cooperative with a lot of them. So you should go to the UAVdigest.com and check out, and maybe there's a drone conference near you.
That's right.
Hey, can I mention my favorite little company that I saw there?
Yes, of course.
You guys have probably heard of. This is a perfect crossover for me. When we talk every week on the Airplane Geeks podcast, one of the things that comes up from time to time is that both Rob and I are flight instructors in the Cirrus aircraft, which is most notable for its parachute. And of course, there at the show, Fruity Shoots was displaying their UAS parachute recovery system. So I think it's pretty cool that we have a crossover from the world of general aviation airplanes over to UAS, a parachute recovery system. That's pretty cool, and especially the name. I mean, just listening to the name makes me hungry.
I know, it does. I think there's a big potential market for those, because certainly there are an awful lot of drones that get lost, you know, in situations where they're unrecoverable, into the water, into the ocean, into the river, whatever.
Well, and also for flight over people. You know, right now that's kind of one of the big challenges for 107. You can't be flying over people, but maybe they'll make an exception for that if you have a parachute system. It would make sense to me. I mean, the issue I see is that most quadcopters have at least a few, single points of failure, where if that one item breaks, boom, it's coming down. And this is a smart idea for that.
Yeah. Also for those that have a lot of, or that are carrying a lot of expensive gear, sensors or video equipment or, that sort of a thing, where a hard landing could get very, very expensive. Because a hard landing means it's going to, in most cases, it's going to hit that equipment first. So, a parachute recovery system for those applications sounds like it might be a good idea.
And I did see one of the exhibitors was in the insurance business, and I didn't stop to talk with him at their booth, but it did make me kind of wonder, who are they insuring? Are they insuring the people and property that you might crash into, or are they crazy enough to insure the drone, which you are sure to crash? strikes me that comprehensive for the drone, that part of the portion of the coverage would be pretty darn expensive.
All right. Well, Mike Smith sent us a video. It will make our video of the week. It was shot at his home airport, Minuteman Airfield in Stowe, Massachusetts. Mike writes, "We had a morning flying Young Eagles, and so one of our EAA chapter members got permission from the airport owner and the pilots to do some filming with his drone. Everyone played nice together because they discussed it ahead of time and worked together." So you can find that video in the show notes for this episode. Well, Max Trescott, we're really thankful that you could come on the show and tell us about your experiences at the Drone World Expo in San Jose. Do you think you'll be going to more of these?
Oh, absolutely. I went to the NASA UTM conference last summer, learned a phenomenal amount about what NASA is doing for UAS traffic management. So I'm certainly very interested in the industry. It's kind of fun to watch it emerge and grow.
For sure. All right, well, let's wrap this one up. We want to thank you for listening to the UAV Digest. This has been episode 172. You can find us at the UAVdigest.com, of course. And if you want to go straight to the show notes for this episode, that's at the UAVdigest.com/172.
We'd love for you to join our listener team. You can send us an email, feedback@theuavdigest.com. Of course, using that email address, you could always send us your stories, your links, and of course, send us some video that you've shot with your UAV. You can find us on Twitter @UAV Digest, on Facebook @UAV Digest,
And of course, you can become a patron of the show at our Patreon website, or you could purchase some swag. But most of all, we really, this time of year, would like you to give thanks. And you can do that by sending us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. That way other people can find us and Max and I can keep bringing you guests like Max Trescott. So with that, I'm going to say it's David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
And Max West in California.
Thanks for listening.